Hi everyone, David here. Thank you so much for listening to What Matters. We hope you enjoy today's show. Before we begin, just a quick word on how you can access the rest of our essential journalism on Foresight Climate and Energy. If you, and maybe some of your colleagues, would like premium access to the What Matters podcast and the rest of Foresight, join our global community by becoming a member. You can try us for 30 days for less than €1 a day, which will give you access to our new website and app. Just follow the link in the show notes or go to www.foresightmedia.com to find out more. Hi everyone, David here. This week's episode of What Matters is going to be a little bit different, as neither me, Michaela, or Jan feature. Let me explain. Michaela and I were due to host a special live podcast at Solar Power Europe's summit in Brussels. However, due to completely unrelated and unforeseeable health issues, neither of us could make it. And Jan was already travelling, so wasn't due to appear anyway. So up steps our saviour, Kira Taylor, podcast producer and substitute host extraordinaire. Kira leads a fascinating discussion on how to maximise rooftop solar in Europe and the issues that the sector is facing, particularly around supply chain bottlenecks, storage costs and financing arrangements. It's a really interesting conversation, which I'm sure you'll find valuable, and Jan, Michaela and I will be back with another guest very soon. And until then, thanks for listening.
So hello and welcome to this episode of What Matters, the podcast that puts the performance into the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive. This week we have a special episode recording live from the Solar Power Summit in Brussels. My name is Kira Taylor, I'm a journalist with Foresight Climate and Energy and the producer of What Matters. Today I'm joined by a panel of special guests looking into rooftop solar. Solar panels are installed in 10 to 25% of the EU's buildings, and the market is growing at around 20% a year on average. To build on this success, the European Union is now creating a solar standard that will make solar a core element of new buildings. The challenge is securing the business model for solar and finding innovative financing solutions. In this live episode of What Matters, we will discuss emerging product trends, financing and electrification to navigate the evolving landscape and promote solar adoption. Joining us to discuss that, we have an amazing panel who I would like to invite up onto the stage now. We have Annette Pearson, Policy Officer at the European Commission, Natalie Rubin-Delanchi, Public Policy Manager at the retailer Amazon, Arthur Kulvik, co-founder, chairman and senior vice president at smart solar solutions provider Solnet, and finally Nicolas Rendrier, secretary general at the Fédération Française du Bâtiment, or French Building Federation. Thank you all for joining us. So I'd like to kick off our discussion by talking a bit about the upcoming EU solar standard. I know a lot of people probably in this room were quite excited to see solar included in the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive. Annette, let's start with you about this. How do you see this influencing the solar landscape and the adoption in commercial and residential buildings? And how does it tie into the rest of the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive?
So thank you very much, Kira, and thanks for having me here today. So as you are probably well aware, the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive, there is now a provisional agreement, and we are expecting the final agreement in later this year, in April. And this is really to put buildings at the core of the transformation. So it's a really important piece of the Fit for 55 package, because as you are probably also well aware, buildings represent 40% of the energy consumption and almost around a third of the greenhouse gas emissions in the EU. And we now have this opportunity to also look specifically into how we can use the rooftops. So with this new legislation put in place in member states, all new buildings will have to be designed so that to maximize the possibility to generate solar energy. And this is not only solar PV, it is also about solar thermal energy, which can be really useful also in buildings, for instance, for hot water production and other. And so there will be a gradual phasing. So from 2026, all new public and non-residential buildings will have to have, where it is suitable, they will have to have solar installations. And the same will apply for residential buildings 3 years later, so by 2029. But as you're also very well aware, new buildings is not the main part of the buildings we have today. We really have to address the existing buildings. And this is why the solar mandate also applies to those buildings that are already built, which might have really good roof surfaces which can be used. So for public buildings, there will be a gradual phase-in, starting with the larger public buildings, like it could be schools, hospitals, or administrative buildings, starting with them in 2027, and then gradually phase-in. And the same goes for other existing non-residential buildings. So, of course, this will have a major impact.
Thank you. I think it's a really useful overview of what the EPBD is doing for solar as we begin our discussions. Natalie, I'd like to come to you next. How does Amazon use rooftop solar, and how are you seeing the EU solar standard fit in with your sustainability goals and policies?
Yeah, so I mean, first of all, so thanks from my side for inviting me to join this panel. I think for us, Amazon has a goal to be net zero by 2040. So we took this goal in 2019. We're very proud of it. We co-founded the Climate Pledge, and we identified for this goal that renewable energy would be one of the areas that we really could move much faster than other areas. So what we've done is taken a 100% renewable energy goal by 2030, so 10 years ahead of our 2040 goal. And we're actually on track to meet that goal by 2025. So that's just in a few months' time. And that's due to the possibility of really investing in renewable energy, both on-site and off-site, as you can imagine. In that context, rooftop solar has been really important. So for our buildings, if you think about the typical Amazon fulfillment center, it's a nice rectangular building with a nice flat roof. So really ideal for deploying rooftop solar. And based on this, we now have 92 buildings across Europe that have rooftop solar and counting. So we're scaling this up quite a lot. And what the EPPD does, so building on what Annette was saying, by sending really clear signals to the markets as to where the EU wants to go by 2030, so both for new buildings that will be launched, but also existing buildings that will be retrofitted. For us, it is really helpful because it actually sends a lot of legal certainty. We know that the price of solar is likely going to come even further down. The whole ecosystem around rooftop solar is going to build up. We're going to see development of skills to build the solar system. We're going to have the supply chain that's going to be built up as well. And this means that we're able to scale up even further on our own buildings. So it's a very useful signal. The only caveat that we would have, and I'm sure we'll discuss this a bit further in the panel, is just that it needs to then be accompanied by the whole enabling framework around rooftop solar. So the grids are going to be a very important element in that, but also enabling the business models that will help us make the most of the rooftop solar capacity that we have. So battery storage needs to be cheaper so that we can really deploy it at scale, and then reviewing the different tire structures to make sure that we're able to self-consume, but also to feed back to the grids when we really have overcapacity.
I was wondering how long it would take for the grid word to come up. It's going to be something we'll get onto later. Arta, I'd like to come to you next. What type of innovations and smart technology can you see helping this roll out?
Well, I think it's I'm echoing what we've been saying from the start. So looking at kind of the initial phase of solar, we were just thinking about putting solar on individual buildings. However, players like Amazon, who have a lot of different sites, looking at the technology choices and how do you manage these as a fleet? How do you actually think about this being deployed across a large number of assets where the solar utilities, you know, a little small investment compared to the value of goods and services within that building? So manufacturing, distribution, e-commerce, all of these are customer segments where we really need to think about kind of extra measures on safety, remote management. How do we actually manage that fleet in a sensible way from an operations and maintenance perspective? So these are all things that are coming forth, and looking at kind of US, which is running a little bit maybe ahead in terms of looking at this from a kind of jurisdiction perspective. We're still lacking kind of general guidelines or even more strict than guidelines practices across Europe. So looking at, for example, rapid shutdown on the roofs, looking at how do we actually deal with large-scale solar without just doing curtailment on remote management, but bringing them into balancing services. So these are all the kinds of things that are coming. A lot of the technology is not new, but implementing it is, and thinking about it this way is.
And Nicholas, I'd like to bring you into this as well. We've already heard that the grids are a challenge for this. What challenges do you see with DSOs and permitting timelines, and how can the industry and policymakers work together to try and overcome those issues and create faster grid connections?
First, thank you for letting me in your podcast. It's a very good question because I think in France we have a very long time to connect PV plants, small PV plants to the grid. In fact, some installers, I'm from French Building Federation, I work every day with installers, which are all members, and installers say, oh, I have a project, I must wait 7 years to connect it to the grid. And I'm not talking about a project in a Amazon roof, no. Smaller project in a, on the farm, on the barn or something. And so we have to find a solution because here the installers are the link between the regulatory and the clients. So to do so, in the first question is why do you have this situation in France? In fact, the grid policies are discussed and the funding are discussed every 10 years. And at the time, maybe eight years ago, the policymakers didn't see the large outcome of photovoltaics, of small projects. So they only think about the large project, but when you add powers of small projects, it makes bigger projects. So we have to find a solution, and we gather the grid operators to a discussion with other syndicates and with the representative or installers to find a solution. I'm just here to say simple thing and basic things. When you want to develop a market, you want to stabilize the market, you have to listen, have the will to help all the people which have an impact on the market. So, in fact, we have found that the grid capacity was booked by large, very large wind power plants sometimes, just in case the project will do. So, the green owner makes an experiment in southwest France and they prioritize photovoltaics. I'm not saying photovoltaic must be the major energy must be prioritized because we know that renewables energy are complementary, but just for the connection, we move up on the queue the small PV projects, and then this now is a rule for all the country. And also we have now the local installer representatives which are consulted by the policymakers to a better anticipation for the PV development. And just to say, beware of your grid policies, because it's impossible to say to someone you have to wait 7 years to be able to produce your electricity by your photovoltaics.
Thank you. Beware of grid policies. I think that's a perfect transition across to Natalie, who's already brought this up. Given the greater expectation of curtailment, Natalie, how critical is it to establish efficient grid connections to sell the excess energy and build larger solar power systems?
I mean, you're mentioning it, obviously grids are going to be very important to the discussion, but when it comes to curtailment, we're facing curtailment already in quite a few of the markets that we have solar rooftop in. So, I mean, it's a huge issue because it's just a waste of potential. And it also affects a lot the way we size our systems. So even if we have very large rooftops, if we're not able to actually consume or sell the electricity that we're producing, we're not going to use that whole surface to build rooftop solar. So we have to fix the issue with curtailment and congestion. Otherwise, we're really wasting the opportunity. And I know this is very much the EU's vision with the REPowerEU initiative, was to have rooftop solar in all rooftops, roofed car parks across motorways. And if you want to reach that vision, then the grids are going to have to be fixed. And maybe just a data point, which for me was very striking. I don't know if you've read the IEA report that was published end of last year, but they mentioned that over 80 million kilometers of grids need to be refurbished worldwide in order to reach the goals that countries across the world have set for renewable energy. And this is the size of the whole existing grids at the moment. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And I think when we've discussed grids a lot with policymakers, and I think everyone is bringing out the same message that grids really need to be refurbished, they need to be improved, they need to be made more modern. But maybe one area that we're interested in is to be involved in the discussion. So I think the demand side hasn't been very much represented so far. And for instance, we know where we're going to be deploying rooftop solar. We know where we're going to be charging the electric vehicles that we're going to be deploying. And we would like to offer this data to grid operators or planners so we could be involved in the forecast of demand. And I think this is data that everyone should be able to pull together so that actually we build a grid that really represents where the demand and supply is going to need to be in a few years' time.
Hi everyone, David here again. Thank you for tuning in to Foresight Climate and Energy. Remember, your engagement shapes our content. So share your thoughts and keep the conversation going on our new website and app. Not a member yet? You can give us a try for 30 days for just €29. Go to foresightmedia.com or follow the link in the show notes. Now, back to our conversation.
And just staying with you, are you seeing any particular solutions in terms of storage?
We're testing, I mean, Amazon really tests out all different possibilities, but it's true, battery storage combined with solar, for us, it's an area that would be really interesting, but we just find that currently it's still too expensive, unfortunately, which is not the case in, for instance, the US. I mean, California has great incentive schemes for this, and this has allowed us to really launch buildings with rooftop solar combined with batteries, but this is not the case in the EU at present because the price doesn't really justify a good return on investment. But this is an area that, for us, also the EU really should prioritise. Because if we have extra capacity, either we can sell it straight into the grid or we can store it and then sell it later on during the day or consume it ourselves. So, of course, batteries would be a really important part of that.
And Arthur, I'd like to come to you on this. So one solution might be storage. How can commercial and industrial consumers be incentivized to include a storage element in their systems? And maybe you'd like to respond to what Nathalie said as well.
Two parts in this. So, of course, monetary incentives are always a good way to incentivize application of new technologies. And solar is becoming more of a commodity. Business case is solid. People understand it. Batteries are still, I'd say, not understood as well. Mostly when we think about applications within a building, you're concerned about export energy, what to do with that. And if we look at just using a battery for storing excess solar production, the business case is not there. Looking at the difficulties of kind of solving grid congestion issues, batteries are one part of that equation. However, the other part is actually what's happening currently is us moving towards a common bidding platform, which makes participation on balanced markets in different regions easier. And this is, I think, a really big part of it, because without the balanced market application, the batteries don't make sense. If you're doing that, then the financial and business case is there. If you then also take the solar utility as part of that, you're not dealing with curtailment. You're actually getting a profit out of participating in curtailment, but balanced markets. And that alleviates the grid congestion. So if enough utilities are connected in the same region where you have congestion, it's really about the balancing services that will solve that congestion problem, not prohibiting connections. So we can connect a lot more capacity onto the networks, whether it is batteries or solar, if we actually have this remote management of the balancing services where owners are incentivized by monetary means to participate in those markets.
I mean, that sounds great. How do we make it happen? Yeah, who do we need to ask for it?
Me. Okay. It's up to us sales guys to really actually, first of all, educate our customers to understand what the business opportunity is. Then look at how do we make this easy enough. Right now, when I get the technical spec sheet for, you know, implementing a battery, 99% of my customers are incapable of answering the basic spec sheet. What do you want? What do you need? That's part of our job, is to really make that tangible and easier to move forward, and then your job to find the incentives to support that.
Excellent. And I'd like to bring you in as well, because we've heard about the solar standard, but there also may be some challenges to properly rolling it out. What's your view, and do you think the solar standard is enough to solve that, or is the Commission going to have to come up with yet more legislation to help us out here?
So we heard it before in previous panels that implementation is really key for things to happen. And once we will have the final text adopted, the member states will have 2 years to implement these new provisions. And we will work very closely with the member states to help them clarify any issues that needs clarification, to provide guidance, and also engage with the stakeholders like you to really prepare everything. Because, of course, they need to put the legislation in place, but also, as Natalie mentioned, the enabling framework is really, really important. What needs to be there in form of financial support, but also information, awareness, and also technical assistance and support in all these areas. And this will be one important part of the national building renovation plans that each member state will have to draw up to see how can we transform the existing building stocks to zero emission buildings by 2050. And this will be to outline the policies and the enabling framework for solar will be one important part of this. So, implementation is key, I would say.
Natalie, when it comes to that kind of implementation, how close do you see companies like Amazon working with national governments to help them out on this type of thing?
Well, we try to, as much as we can, share information about what we're planning. As I was mentioning before, we do know, obviously, where we're going to be building our rooftop solar over the next few years. And so I think in that sense, companies like Amazon, but other companies as well, have a really important role to play in explaining where they're investing, because that's exactly what national governments need to see in order to understand how they're going to meet their own targets. So indeed, I think we work very closely with the governments in the countries where we have our buildings and where we're building our rooftop solar, but also other projects. And I think it's important that we continue doing that work.
And Nicolas, how do you see this rolling out in France with the government and the conversations that you're going to need to have with them to get the EPBD and the solar standard working? Yeah.
In fact, the EPBD works well with the RED III. In one hand, you have obligations to do photovoltaics on rooftop. In the other hand, you have your electricity bill, which is rising. So now in France, as the obligations are running since about 2018, I think, if my memory is correct. So now you can't have in CNI a new building without rooftops. The owners want photovoltaics on rooftops, sorry. So the owners want photovoltaics, and so it's great. So that's how the real impact and the good impact of those obligations and those directive, European directives, on France. And we can assume that it will be the same on the other countries of Europe.
And Arthur, what innovative financing solutions are there here? How can companies actually afford this?
Well, I think that we have three main models: direct investment, power purchase agreements, and then leasing agreements. But it's in all three, it's about access to capital and cost of capital. So we've heard this before in this previous sessions that solar is capital intensive. So looking at kind of how to really roll this out. Larger corporates already have the means to do this. They either have a healthy balance sheet to invest directly, or they can leverage financing options and they get a PPA without questions. However, the biggest untapped potential for access to capital is kind of these family-owned businesses that still roll, you know, tens of millions of revenue each year, but are less inclined to invest into solar rather than directly growing their own business. So how do they actually leverage this without taking a bank loan and having that, you know, weigh on their balance sheet? How can they have the utilities benefits without that kind of financial hindrance? And that's where PPA and lease agreements play a really crucial role on kind of whose balance sheet the utility is on. And I'm not sure you can correct me, but probably not in your interest as an Amazon either to just have assets on your balance sheet, but probably diversify that as well.
Natalie, do you want to come in on that? Or
I mean, to be honest, I completely agree. So.
Yeah.
Sure. And Nicolas, one of the other challenges we see is the insurance challenge. How are policymakers and industry leaders working together to ensure these concerns are addressed, the concerns where about broader coverage for buildings with solar? Yeah,
that's a major issue in France. In fact, I can't go anywhere without the question about how well the insurance in France, and since 2017, we have a major crisis in France about insurance for the installers. And at this time, and the years after, I had about one or two questions a day from installers which didn't find solution to insure themselves. So we have to know why there was this crisis in France, because it was because photovoltaics cost to the insurers 6 times more in claims that they receive in annual premiums. So when you touch the bill, you understand why that was difficult. So in fact, in France, we have kind of a photovoltaic bubbles which burst in 2010. We had this bubble because the market wasn't securized by technical requirements or scale checking. In fact, we had feed-in tariff since 2002, but the clients, the customers can't have the feed-in tariff even if the installation were made by something which really wasn't an installer. So that's why we have some damages on the installations. And also the BIPV was mandatory to have the best feed-in tariffs. But we made BIPV without knowing how to make them because there was no trainings. So that made some problems. And to overcome this crisis, again, also, we gather insurers, governments, syndicates, NGOs also around the table to say, okay, we have a problem. It's not insurers' problem. It's not installers' problem. It's our problems. And without insurance in France, we can make a mass market. I have also to tell you that in France we have a 10-year liability for the installers. We are the only one who have this insurance. So if there is a problem within 10 years, you say to the installers, "Oh, it's on you," and then we think and we experts will find if there is effectively the installers or technical issues from the products or so on. So when I explain this, you can think of why it was very, very difficult to installer to insurers, and also why it was difficult to new companies to go to solar. So we gather people and discuss also like from the grid issues, and we have made evolve the technical the requirements of the products on the solar mountings linked to the panels and the buildings, the roofs. Governments has put, we say, qualifications, so scale verifications in order to deliver them feed-in tariffs and financial helps. Maybe 15 years later, but still. And now we have also to improve the technical knowledge of the installers, because the installers, of course, but also the insurers, because insurers, they only see photovoltaics like damages to be, in fact. Because, as I said, 6 times more in the cost than in the premiums. And so we have to make them understand that when we have the right installers, well-trained with technical products, which are tested in the right way, it's not quite a risky or is normal. It's a normal risk. It's also very mandatory to improve the knowledge of insurance of the installers, because they are technical guys and then don't know how the insurance policies work. It's very, very important to help them to understand.
If I may add, so we work closely together with insurance like Zurich, for example, and we have just recently published a white paper exactly on this topic. So what to look at in fire and electrical safety, quality of installation, quality of components, and what are kind of the measurements that you need to look at in making sure that the installations are done right. Their insurers are actually, I'm happy to tell you, quite knowledgeable these days. They have learned quickly. They are coming out with new guidelines, looking at exactly rapid shutdowns, looking at choice of components, looking at the kind of certifications you need to do and quality testing that you need to do at the end. And I highly recommend going to our site and downloading the white paper, because that covers a lot of these subjects and how to actually tackle that and look at this from both on-site operational and installation safety, but also securing the business case. So even a lot of companies are thinking that a PPA is a way to outsource your risk, but that's not entirely true. If you're not getting the kilowatt hours out of the system that you were expecting, you're paying for those kilowatt hours from the network. And even if you have penalties on your installer, you're still going to be stuck with the electricity bill at the end of the month. So this is really something that is currently quite high focus area for insurers and our customers as well.
Interesting. Well, if there are any insurers in the room, you have your homework to do on that white paper. We now have time for questions from the audience. If there are any questions, I think we have a microphone at the back. So simply raise your hand. We have a question right at the front here. Please, could you introduce yourself and your organization?
My name is Armin Freudsheim. I'm from SolarWatt, and we are producing solar modules. So I'm more familiar with manufacturing and ramping up production capacity. But we also have this issue: if you bring many machines online, you have called simultaneity factor. And you have that if I ask my engineers, they want, if I bring 10 machines into operations, they want to have the tenfold capacity of power. And but this is, if you do it rightly and have a proper demand side management and intelligent way of working with the power, switching on one after the other, you can easily go to only 20% of the used power supply. So the question is that not also a idea for bigger grids, as you have been discussing?
Does anyone on the panel want to take that?
Maybe just briefly on my side, I mean, it's true for Amazon. We also have a goal to electrify our delivery fleet. So if you think about when you get an Amazon package, it comes with a truck and we want all those trucks to be electric. And so we've made a commitment to invest over 1 billion by 2030. So that's also just around the corner to buy electric trucks and electric vans. And we're expecting to put over 10,000 of these on the road. And if you think about the potential of those trucks and those vans when they're sitting charging in our warehouses is huge. And so for us, we're looking into different ways that we could use these as flexibility management, so really using this to balance the grids. But of course, again, we need to have the right policy framework in place and the grids in place to be able to handle these variable loads and to be able to incentivize companies to do this kind of service so that we can actually provide balancing services to the grids. I think echoing what our colleague was saying, definitely we would support this as well.
Excellent. Do we have any other questions?
I may actually continue a little bit on that. I think that this is something that will also require kind of the software layer to develop. So looking at auxiliary services, grid management, in your case that you used, integrating all the way down to, you know, drive scheduling management to know which cars you can actually touch and which not, and which need to be charged to a certain point to do the delivery routes. So it really is about this more holistic integration of systems, not just energy systems, but a lot more of kind of customer end and business case related systems, so that we can do balancing, we can do drive scheduling and make it all work seamlessly together. But currently we still have a lot of siloed systems, and that's what is causing these issues.
Annette, would you also like to come in on this?
Yes, so just to complement also, so in the EPBD, there's also the provisions on infrastructure for sustainable mobility. And I really want to also take up on what you said about system integration, because of course it's really important to have the smart and bidirectional charging possibilities and also load balancing where it is feasible to and really look at the solar installation as part of this integrated system.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions? We've got time for one more short one, unless everyone's feeling very shy.
Can I ask a question?
We've never had a question from one of the panels. Go for it.
No, it was more a question for Annette, to the extent that you're able to speak about it. I was wondering, based on also the discussions that you've been hearing over the course of today, what are the main recommendations that you would put forward for the next mandate for rooftop solar specifically? So we've got very far with the EPPD, and what do you see as the next big ticket item?
Well, when it comes to the next mandate, I'm all ears. So it's for you to to tell me what you would want to see, and I would bring it along in the organization.
I mean, for us grids, we're
but of course, the grids and the flexibility issues, it's really, really important.
Well, you've led perfectly onto my closing question. So that's about all we have time for. Thank you to everyone for listening. Before we go, I'd like to get each of the panel to answer one last question. So in one sentence, what do we need to boost rooftop solar in Europe, either from the next commission or just in general? Annette, let's start with you. What do you see as the one thing we need to make rooftop solar even better in Europe?
Well, for the next 2 years, we need a proper implementation of the EPBD solar mandate with a good enabling framework.
Thank you. Nathalie?
I'm not going to say grids for this one because I've said it enough, but I think maybe also considering the wider array of tools that the EU has at its disposal. So one thing that we're really interested in is net metering. So the ability to, when you get your utility bill, for that to be discounted for the electricity that you've put into the grids, and you would have a lower bill with a lower amount of energy consumed because you've been able to provide some to the grids. And I think there are a number of different ways that you can incentivize companies to invest in self-consumption or invest in feeding electricity to the grid. And those should all be considered because something will fit each different company differently.
Arthur, how about you?
I think a lot's already been said, but I think one of those things that should be done to speed up execution across Europe is more unified regulation. So permitting, grid connections, all of these processes vary greatly between countries. And we work across Europe, and I have to say that from Finland to Italy, things vary a lot.
And Nicholas, how about you?
Yeah, I would say don't forget the technical parts of photovoltaics, because photovoltaic on rooftops will be a way to develop a mass market, or it can also a way to bury the market if you have any damages, or and we don't want that, any casualties. So the technicity is important, not as a purpose, but it's a way to have a sustainable market.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, thank you to all of our panelists for sharing their views today. Thank you to our audience for joining us and Solar Power Europe for hosting us and everyone who's worked behind the scenes on this. If you have any questions for the What Matters team or wish to add to the conversation, why not join us on our new website? We have a new Foresight website and app. You can go to www.foresightmedia.com. And if you're listening to the podcast, you can follow the link in the show notes. We have lots of amazing podcasts and deep dives into the energy transition. So come and check Foresight out. And thank you all, and hope you have a good rest of the day.